Welcome to iRun Radio. Coming up, running and juggling to an epic finish.
We knew we were under the world record at 18 kilometers into the race, so now we knew we were 10 minutes from the finish line. And I was like, all right, we're just going to go for it, and if we tie, we tie. Whatever happens.
Completing 100 marathons despite a devastating injury.
I got hit by a car on the way to the race, and I flew on the hood and shattered the windshield with my body and bounced off the hood and landed in front of the car. And I mean, I just think that moment until today, I think of how my life could have been so much different. And it was probably a month or two after the accident. I felt like there was a reason why I survived, and that's when I decided I wanted to get back to running for what it had given to me.
And a running guru shares some of his favorite stories.
I remember standing at the finish line with John Halverson, and we were waiting for the last runner coming in and at the Ottawa Marathon one year. When that last runner came in, what was interesting, it was a gentleman who'd had a heart incident at the previous marathon, had heart open heart surgery, and then he and his family ran in together at the end of the finish line. Well, you know, we all had pretty moist eyes when that gentleman crossed.
On this edition of iRun Radio, John Stanton of The Running Room, how a woman ended up running 100 marathons despite devastating injuries, and running and juggling to the finish line. Let's get things started now with the editor and general manager of iRun, Ben Kaplan. Hello, Ben.
Hey there.
How are things going this week? Are you enjoying the holidays?
Yeah, it's been great. A lot of running, a lot of feeling good and celebrations.
Yeah, so, and family time.
Yeah,
good stuff. And you've been getting some runs in, and you've been feeling good about your year. I know this has been a very good year for you. You wrote about it. You summarized it very, very well in a piece that you did on iRun.ca, and there were some ups and downs, but I think you have a lot to be proud of as a runner this year. It's been a good year.
Well, you say that with a tone in your voice. Now, we'll let the listeners be the ultimate judge of that, but there's a certain tone in your voice as if you're convincing yourself of what you're saying is true.
No, I'm trying to convince you because,
if that's me being defensive, if I'm hearing something that's not actually there,
I'm trying to convince you that it's true because I suspect if I said, how would you rate this year, you would be, you'd be talking about some of the races that didn't go according to plan as opposed to all the ones that did. So I'm trying to, I'm trying to get you to focus on the positive here.
This was comforting. Okay, I see. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you win some, you lose some. And in general, I definitely won more than I lost. And I also think that most importantly to me is that I definitely think when I look back on the year, the easiest way for me to do that and to sort of organize my thoughts to where I was and what I was doing and what the year even looked like is through the races that I did. So, I didn't break any records for myself, although I did break a record for myself in terms of most races ran. And perhaps when you do it that way, your times might slow. But, I definitely enjoyed racing in the new year. And then for a while, towards the end of the year, I was sort of thinking, I'm going to hang up my Sauconies and call it a day. You know, I might retire from the game. But sure enough, this week I decided I'll be back and I'll do the Chile Half Marathon in Burlington, which around Toronto and Ontario, in this neck of the woods, tends to be sort of the kickoff to the season. And basically when I was done with racing, I was like, there is just no way I'm going to drag my old carcass out to Burlington in the winter and do the Chile Half again. I think I've done it, every year for 10 years, and it's always just, the first race of the season, you go too fast, it's cold, yada, yada. And I'm like, I'm just not doing it. And sure enough, I am. Yes, I am.
Well, I'm not surprised.
past
behavior is sometimes a predictor of future behavior. And you've done it 10 years in a row. I don't see you stopping all of a sudden unless you can't. But look, you look ahead to the next year and it's a blank canvas, right? And the thing I love about this is, you and I, we talk about races, we talk about the events we go to, but underlying all of that, it doesn't really matter how you do in the events because those are all a bonus, right? The fact that you're out there running day in, day out, you're running a few times a week, you're getting stronger, you're exercising, you've got a goal, you're chasing something down. That is really the main event, right? It doesn't, you know, the races are just victory laps. They're icing on the cake. They're fun things to do. It's great to set a goal and all of that. But the real meat and potatoes of this whole thing is just running day in and day out. And that's what we're doing all year round.
That's right. If you're an engineer and you're working on a product and you're enjoying the process and the team's getting along great and you're just having funny dress up on Fridays and your life is great, but in the end the thing doesn't work, well, you know, that's a failure. It's like a defined thing like that. But for us, like, you know, if I score a 135 at the chilly half, like, but had fun getting through there and, you know, got along with my mother-in-law, that's a win. That's 129 versus 135.
Sure.
What's the difference? You know?
Right, it's the lifestyle, right? It's not the big events. It's day in and day out. And so many things about life are like that. You have to remember that, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is the real luxury. And actually what got me going again is I have a best friend that lives near me, and he kind of fell off. And a very big deal for him in 2019 to run more, and he wants to do the marathon in the spring. And I was like, beautiful, I'm right there with you. And that was sort of my motivator. And then, you know, and then now just like that, I'm back.
So, right on. It's going to be a good year. Ben, I want to wish you a very happy new year. All the best to you and your
happy
family
new year.
In 2019. Yeah. Thanks for being with us. We'll talk to you next week.
You too, my friend. Happy New Year.
Ben Kaplan, iRun's editor and general manager. Coming up next, a great story about running and juggling and the pursuit of a record. iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you. Graydon Snyder is a joggler. That's someone who runs and juggles at the same time. And a few weeks ago, he was in an epic half-marathon race in which he and another runner were chasing a world record. Graydon, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So tell me a little bit about how you got into running. I've talked with your mother before, and she's very proud of all you've done as a runner. She's often tweeted about your results, and she's emailed me to say, you should talk to this guy. And so here we are. Tell me a little bit about how this all started for you.
So you're interested. You want to know where the running first came?
Yeah.
Or the running and the juggling?
Before we get to the juggling, let's focus on the running first. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it was kind of evolved into a sport on its own for me, because when I was younger, growing up in Ottawa, it was all about skiing. So skiing in the Gatineaus, and that was a lot of fun, and I didn't start very competitively, but as the years went on, I got faster, and, you know, when the snow disappears, you go for a run, of course. It wasn't until university, or even after university, that I started to run more competitively. It was kind of a late discovery that I had a little bit of skill there. So I was running like 36 minute 10Ks, and then kind of all of a sudden, within a year of proper training, the times dropped down to like 32. So I was like, oh, okay, that was interesting. I didn't expect that. So yeah, that was back in the early 2000s, where I was sort of discovering how to run fast.
Yeah, very fast, in fact. I mean, those are some impressive times. So put some pressure on you to start training harder and seeing if you can go faster than that, right?
Yeah, like, running is a very honest sport, because, you know, it's not easy to even do it half well, because you can very quickly align your times with everyone else in the world, and you can quickly discover just how many other fast people there are. So, you know, as soon as you get better, there's still people in front of you. it keeps you hungry, but it keeps you honest.
Yeah, everything's relative. There's always people who are ahead of you, and always people who are behind you as well. That's kind of a metaphor for life, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So from there, how did you get into running and juggling at the same time, or is it called joggling?
Yeah, so I kind of had two independent hobbies that lived parallel lives for years. When I was probably 14, not even, maybe even younger, I started to juggle. I think it was actually a day camp, so I must have been more like 12 years old when I first learned to juggle. But then in my teens, I started to like juggle properly. And then in my early 20s, I was getting up to five balls and learning a few tricks, but I was, not going to quit my day job over that, but it was a fun little pastime while
yeah,
I was
so
getting better
this
at
was,
running.
This was something you were just doing for fun? Obviously, you weren't busking or doing anything like that with it. It was just something you were having fun with?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I've seen what a professional juggler can do, and it's quite mind-blowing. So I always was a firm believer that I was just doing it for hobby's sake and not even really for performance. But the two kind of merged in when I was in my 20s. When I first tried, I'd heard of juggling, and what I found interesting about it was that, there's a synchronicity that it was strangely natural. It sounds like the most ridiculous thing to juggle and run at the same time, but when you do it, like when you finally get it to happen, it's one throw for every step, so there's this kind of strangely natural feel about it once you actually get going.
What does it feel like when you're running and juggling at the same time? And how long did it take you to kind of get the hang of it?
It took about a number of years, I would say, to get it to the point that I would be willing to show people in public. It's actually really hard. It looks hard and actually is hard. I'd say 3 or 4 years of practice before I got to the point that I really had it feeling natural. And once it does feel natural, then it actually does feel just like running. Just this extra thing on top of it, but they kind of merge together.
So you're kind of used to it now. I guess it feels a lot more natural than it used to.
Yeah. First thing you learn after coordinating your arms and legs is to not look directly at them, or you kind of get cross-eyed and look ahead of yourself. So you have to use your peripheral vision almost entirely throughout the whole time.
Now, how much slower are you running because you are juggling at the same time? How much does it slow you down?
I'd say about 20 seconds a kilometer. So for like a half marathon, normally I'm running around 3:20 per kilometer. But with juggling on top of that, I'm the Toronto, I'm running around 3:40 a kilometer, just under.
Okay. Yeah, those are fast times either way. You'd be way ahead of me even if you were juggling while you were running, and I wasn't. So now I gather there are also some rules around this, right? If you drop a ball, you have to stop and go back. Is that how it works?
Yeah, and it's kind of like an inherent time penalty. So it's not as evil as you have to go all the way back. But if you think about every drop costs you between 5 and 10 seconds, you have a pretty good motivation not to drop. You can quickly lose minutes of time if you're really falling to pieces.
Yeah, and as you say, if it's all harmonized, then it's throwing you off your rhythm anyway. So that's a penalty in itself, as well as having to pick up the ball. What's the farthest you've run without dropping a ball? I mean, how often would you drop a ball when you're doing a half marathon or a marathon?
Let's see. I have yet to try a marathon, but okay. So the half marathon probably was over a dozen times that I dropped, which is not so bad. If I think about it, one every 2 kilometers. But the best result was it was unofficial because I didn't have anyone watching me complete the time. But I did do a 5K without dropping.
Okay. Wow. Good for you. And so is it strangely satisfying to be able to do this? Because obviously to any outsider and to somebody who's not into juggling, it looks peculiar to be running and juggling at the same time. Is it, what do you take some satisfaction from it?
Yeah, I think it's twofold. There's the satisfaction of just, sometimes you just think of something's hard enough, doing it at all, let alone well, is kind of satisfying. And you know, just you know, trying to accomplish something that you've never been able to do before, because it is so hard, and there's no way to cheat, and you can't cheat yourself. If you run and drop, it's pretty clear, cut and dry. So when you're doing well, you know it. So this kind of satisfaction of just having mastered a new skill, you know, there's plenty of crazy skills out there to learn. So it's up there with all the other silly ones I think you could get good at. No worse, no better.
Yeah.
But then for me, the second part is that when I started realizing I was getting pretty fast, there was the satisfaction of knowing that I could compete with these like world record times. So
yeah,
that was like a whole other level.
So tell me about this race in Toronto. And it really was a race. You ended up finishing 2 seconds behind another competitor, and you both broke the world half marathon joggling record.
Yeah, so going into that race, we both had registered with Guinness, so the times were going to be official. The pressure was on. So Mikko Kaprell had set in 2014, had set a time of 1 hour, 20 minutes, and 40 seconds, which, put in perspective, my very first half marathon was about a minute slower than that. So we're not talking about a slow time to begin with.
Yeah. Well, to put it in perspective, I've run 20 half marathons, and not one of them has been within 15 minutes of that. So let's put it into even further perspective that way.
It's really it was really an accomplishment. But yeah. Over the practice, I knew that I was definitely in shape to go under, and Michael Bergeron, who from Halifax, was also in shape for that. He had just set a 10K world record of 35 and a half minutes for joggling. And so we both knew we had a pretty good shot at it. I had no idea it was going to be that close. Our plan was to sort of pace each other for the most part of the race, because it didn't really make sense to, you know, go off really far ahead or anything. So we were competitive, but we kind of thought we would probably see each other in view for most of the race, but really didn't realize that we would just be neck and neck the entire way like that. So we had a friend who helped pace us, and kind of as a backup and partial guide to help us. You technically need someone to have visual contact with you to say that if you drop them, that yes, and he did indeed pick it up and
right.
Whatnot. But he was pacing us, and we were both kind of pacing off of him, and just kept side by side. We knew we were under the world record at 18 kilometers into the race, so now we knew we were 10 minutes from the finish line. And like, all right, we're just going to go for it, and if we tie, we tie, whatever happens. And unfortunately, I got really tired at the end. This is the first time I'd done a half marathon joggling, and this was not his first time, and I started to fall apart at the very end, so I dropped one with 100 meters to go. So,
oh, no.
As painful as it was.
Yeah.
yeah, I might have had a chance had I not made that last mistake.
But that's still a big accomplishment, breaking the world record, even though someone else broke it as well. So congratulations on that. That's phenomenal. And now you've got something to shoot for, because you know you're within striking distance if you wanted to try it again, right?
Oh, yeah. I can list many mistakes that I made, both in the race but also in training. So this was only my first time trying a half marathon distance. I'd actually never even tried 10K before this. So there's a lot of improvement that I can see happen. And the 5, 10, half, and full records are all something I'm thinking about.
Right on. Well, congratulations, Graydon, and you're posting some amazing times, whether you're doing it as a runner or as a joggler. Thank you so much for joining us on the show, and best of luck in the future.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That's Graydon Snyder of Montreal. Coming up next, overcoming devastating injuries to run 100 marathons. iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you.
Denise Soriel has a remarkable story. Despite a devastating injury she suffered in 2009 when she was hit by a car while running, she has now completed 100 marathons. Denise is a coach and author, and she joins us from Chicago. Denise, welcome to iRun Radio.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
And congratulations on your 100th marathon, which was in Chicago, right?
Yes, I can't even believe it. The first one I said never again.
We all said that after the first one, I think. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about what it was like crossing the finish line knowing you had now completed 100 marathons.
It actually kind of hit me at 98 and 99 that I was coming up on my 100th marathon, and I even got emotional in those races, let alone in the 100th that I ran at Chicago. There's no way you can't reflect. Well, I just reflected on what marathoning and running has given to me since I crossed the first marathon finish line back in 1994. I never thought I could do one. I never thought I could get into Boston. It's been my mode of transportation for seeing the world. I ran in high school in track and cross country, and I wasn't very good. And after my third or fourth marathon, I hooked up with a coach in a running group, and he got me crazy fast. I never thought that was possible. It was just, my 100th marathon was even more special because I shared it with, I had about 190 runners that I was coaching. So they were out on the course. So I ran with a megaphone, and I started in the back with a bunch of my runners. And I actually ran with my client, Max. I started with him. He's 82 years young, and he was doing his second marathon. I stayed with him for about 5 miles, and then I just ran along and hit his foot, groupie with them. That's what I call a selfie when there's more than one person in the picture. But it was there's no way I would have wanted to celebrate that day. And then probably the last 4 or 5 miles, I couldn't find any more of my runners. So I got emotional. I really got emotional because what a gift to even do one and to be. Yeah, and I knew my 100th was going to be at Chicago because that's where my first was, and it was the 24th Chicago for me too. So there's a special place in my heart and my feet for Chicago.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's amazing, and of course, since then you've already done more, right? You did New York, so
yes, I just ran New York on Sunday.
Yeah, and how was that? So was that number 101, or were there others too?
No, so that was my 101st, and it was another beautiful experience because I ran it with a first-timer.
Ah, nice. And
yeah, so to be along on someone else's journey, to when they do something they didn't think they can do, it's such a gift, and it's also a high. It's that other runner's high.
Yeah. So what does running mean to you? I think you've touched already, but why is it so important to you? Why have you done all these marathons?
Well, it all kind of started back in fourth grade when running found me. I still don't have the eye-hand-ball coordination for other sports, but ever since I was little, running has just always been there for me. I'd always feel better after a run, even, I shouldn't even say past tense, but ever since the fourth grade girl met running, it makes me feel better. If I'm struggling with something, whether it was in my job or with my personal life, I go for a run and I get clarity, I get direction. It's introduced me to so many people. It's like brushing my teeth. It's another appendage of my body. It's just my best friend.
Yeah, it's a big part of
and
your
I
life, obviously.
With the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you've had some big challenges as well, though. I understand you were involved in a major accident, and because of that, you had to recover from serious injuries. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I mentioned that I've been running since I was little. I ran through high school and college. I wasn't very good. And then after my third or fourth marathon, I started working with a coach, and he got me crazy fast. And I started hanging on, or I started focusing so much on the statistics of my running and racing and the destination that I lost sight of what that fourth grade girl found in running. And what happened was August 16, 2009, I was running to Central Park to do the New York City Half Marathon, and I was, of course, seeking a PR. I was running like 60 to 70 miles at the time. And gratefully, it ended up being my rebirth day, but I got hit by a car on the way to the race, and I flew on the hood and shattered the windshield with my body and bounced off the hood and landed in front of the car. And I mean, I just think that moment until today, I think of how my life could have been so much different. And it was probably a month or two after the accident. I felt like there was a reason why I survived. And that's when I decided I wanted to give back to running for what it had given to me. I mean, I finally found the confidence I'd been searching for when I crossed that first marathon finish line. And like I said, it's given me so much. So I started coaching about a year after that accident. And that accident was actually my rebirth day. So wow. It ended up being a really good thing.
And you've run, what, something like 95, 96 marathons since then, right?
Yeah, I think I was maybe at about 40. I'd have to check my spreadsheet. Yeah. I was probably at like 40 or 45 by then.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought you said you were at 4 or 5 by then. So, no, okay. So you'd
no.
run, yeah, but obviously you've run something like 55, 60 marathons since then.
Yeah, and an Ironman and a 100-miler, and what a gift.
Yeah.
And the difference now with my running now compared to then is I probably race about 25% of my races, and the rest is helping other people, and same with my runs. Probably 25% of my runs are for me, and the rest is to help other people, whether it's I'm helping somebody go from walking a mile to running their first mile, or this weekend I'm helping someone run their first 100-miler.
Wow. So it's not about just you anymore. It's about you're sharing.
No, not at all.
Yeah. And that's obviously a huge part of your journey. That's so impressive. Now, have you favorites from among the many marathons that you've run? Are there ones that you would recommend?
Yes. Well, of course, Chicago's my favorite because I never thought I could do one, and then it's just given me so much. And then I have a couple other favorites that I feel like everyone should run. Of course, Boston. There's nothing. I tell everyone you can never recreate your first marathon until you run your first Boston. There's just something so special about each of those. And then the other favorite I have is the Antarctica Marathon. It's truly the most beautiful place I've been in the world so far. And the second most beautiful, I would have to say, is Reykjavik, Iceland.
Okay, so those are...
I love both of them.
Yeah, two extremes of the planet, north and south, right? That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Big Sur is up there, too.
Okay. And are there marathons that you've never done that you wish you could do someday?
I'd love to do the North Pole Marathon. It's just not in my budget.
Okay. I didn't even know there was a North Pole Marathon.
Yes, there is. I did the Antarctica Marathon for my 40th birthday, and I thought it would be really cool to then do the North Pole for my 50th, but yeah, not yet. I it's not in the financial cards yet.
Yeah.
And, you know, running is the best way to see another city in another country.
It is a great way to see another place.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I see that you've also done all of the World Marathon Majors, right?
Yes.
So tell me.
I'm actually on my second round. In March, I'll be running Tokyo again. So I'll finish that will be my second loop of the Abbott World Marathon Major. So I'll run a dozen.
Okay. Wow. So yeah. What do you tell other people who are, for example, training for their first marathon, who are just starting out? What is it you tell them about the journey they're about to be on?
Well, I have like two approaches for someone who hasn't even signed up yet, that they can do it too. And it's not like gym class running at all. And I tell them to think about other things they've done in their life that they didn't think they could do, but they wanted so bad in all their heart, and they did it, and draw on that commitment and fight from the other experiences they have in their life. And that's what you'll call on with the marathon. And I tell everyone, it's just like taking a class. You get a syllabus, you do your homework, the race day is the final. You can get an A like the elite, you can get a D, and you're still a marathoner. And that anytime we do something we don't think we can do, it transforms us. And for me, I felt like what that first one did is it ignited something within me that had already been there. And then it would lead, like, it led to other firsts that I didn't think I can do. It's going to be scary and exciting, but that finish line will be so worth it on the other end.
It is life-changing, and you describe it so well, Denise. Congratulations on all you've done. And good luck as you continue on your next 100 marathons. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Yeah, thanks again, Mark.
That's Denise Soriol of Chicago. Coming up next, John Stanton of The Running Room. iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you. Another year of races and traveling the country has come to an end for the tireless John Stanton, the founder of The Running Room. John, it's great to talk to you again. Thank you for joining us on iRun Radio.
Good to be with you, Mark.
So tell me a little bit about some of your recent travels. This is the end of a busy year for you, as every year is. I know I'm always amazed because I go to a small number of events every year, and I always see you at all of them. And I know you're going to dozens of other events in between. So you're just constantly on the road, going from running event to running event.
Well, it is, you know, from around the bay, which kicks off in the spring, until last weekend when we had Waterfront Marathon. Every weekend is booked for me as far as where we travel. And, you know, some of it's big events like the Army Run or the Ottawa Marathon, some smaller events like Okanagan Marathon or Calgary or Regina. But, you know, there's an event nearly every weekend. And then sometimes the challenge we have is, you know, Mississauga, Toronto, and Vancouver all have a marathon on the same day, so sometimes it's a challenge. I can't be at them all, but the Running Room certainly has a presence at all three of those on, because they all happen on the same day.
Yeah, and do you rotate? Do you go to one year and then another one the next year?
No,
that kind of thing?
No, I try to be loyal to, you know, Vancouver as an example. I've been going to Vancouver and Ottawa for over 30 years, you know, so unless something dramatically happens, I continue to go to those events. What happened is Vancouver and Toronto used to be on separate dates, and Mississauga, and then they all changed. The two Toronto area events changed, and it coincided with the Vancouver Marathon. And my loyalty is still with Vancouver because I'd been going there for so many years, and you know, I had run it many, many times, and then have been going, you know, as a speaker and announcer and finish line medal presenter and what have you.
Yeah.
So you have to have loyalty to, you know, who you've been going to as long as possible. And there are some events that we're truly loyal to, and the Ottawa Marathon being one of them, Army Run, of course, and around the Bay. Those are sort of events that we've been to for many, many years now. Case the Army Run since its inception. So.
Sure. Yeah, and you work very hard at these events because, you, as you say, you're at the expo, you're meeting runners, you're speaking sometimes, and then you're at the finish line announcing. Sometimes you're handing out medals. You're doing all kinds of things. So it's right through the weekend, right?
Yeah, it is. It goes right through the weekend. But, you know, it's a wonderful opportunity for me to interact with runners and talk to them and find out what they're truly thinking of. And it's a chance for runners sometimes to, you know, if it's a marathon, and particularly those running their first one or trying to run a, you know, maybe a Boston qualifier or something, you can have a chat with them and try to encourage them, try to provide them some reassurance that their training has worked and that it's going to be okay, and give them some last-minute tips on what to do on race day. And, you know, it's a fun event. And, the you know, marathons particularly and half marathons are full of synergy and excitement and energy. And to be part of that is truly fun.
What about your own running? Because I know you've done dozens and dozens of marathons, but you're so busy at these events, you probably don't have time to run. I know you do the friendship runs typically when there's a when there is a friendship run, either the day before or the early in the morning of the race. But what other running have you been doing lately?
Well, you know, I at 70 years old, I turned 70 this year.
Wow, happy
and
birthday.
I can tell you that, you know, my personal best times are well behind me. So I, as far as any racing, I don't do any racing, but I still go out and get for a run every day. I try to run nearly every day if I can, depending on my travel schedule. There's sometimes when it's just impossible to get out. I don't run very long distances anymore because, you know, my role has changed to be more of a coach than an athlete. And, you know, I think that my energies and my contribution to running can be more that of a coach than I can as an athlete. You know, I'm not Ed Whitlock, and Ed Whitlock was a fabulous runner in his senior years. I didn't choose my parents as well as Ed did. And so I put my energies into coaching and trying to encourage people who, like me, had come to running. And, you know, there's still a lot of people that, you know, they're new to running. They're trying to get into it. We try to teach them the fundamentals of a training program. Also put them in a fun social environment that keeps them highly motivated. And, you know, along the way, they can stay injury-free. And that's really the role that we see us playing in it now.
Now, what do you enjoy about being at these running events? Tell me some of the things that make you happy when you're at an expo for a long day or you're at the finish line for hours and hours describing people crossing the finish line. What are the moments that really satisfy you?
Well, it's the success stories, and there's a variety of them. You know, people who have lost weight, quit smoking, you know, gone through tragedies in their life, gone through a marriage breakup, or just moved and traveled and used running as a grounding area. I remember standing at the finish line with John Halverson, and we were waiting for the last runner coming in and at the Ottawa Marathon one year. And we waited, and then we got word that the runner was still about an hour and 15 minutes out, and John and I kind of looked at each other, and by this time it was getting up into the eight-hour mark. And John said, well, I still got lots to do here. He says, no problem, I'm going to wait around. And I said, well, I'll wait around as well. And we did, and when that last runner came in, what was interesting, it was a gentleman who'd had a heart incident at the previous marathon, had heart open heart surgery, and then he and his family ran in together at the end of the finish line. Well, you know, we all had pretty moist eyes when that gentleman crossed, and it brought back the importance of what the running community is all about. It's about that supportive nature. It's about the all-welcoming nature of the running community. It's about fostering and encouraging people to do it regardless of their physical capabilities or their age. And, you know, we as runners, we don't judge anybody by how old they are, whether they're male or female or what their career status is. It's we admire them for the sense of accomplishment. And to see a gentleman come back from open heart surgery and complete a marathon, regardless of his time, he did the start line and he crossed the finish line. And he did it with his family, and we had the privilege of being there to watch him cross. I mean, that's the I call it the warm, fuzzy feelings that, you know, we get out of running. And, you know, people like John Halverson and and others who organize events, Alan Brooks in Toronto. Many of the people who are in the running community are doing it for that reason. Yes, we're privileged to make a living in the running community, but we also have the privilege of contributing back into it, and we get that warm, fuzzy feeling from watching others succeed.
No question. You describe it very well. Now, winter has started to poke its way through in Ottawa, and I know in other places in the country. I know in Alberta there was some wintry weather even going back a few weeks ago. So tell me, do you run outside all year round?
Yeah, I'm not a treadmill or dreadmill runner. I prefer the outdoors. And, you know, I can tell you that, you know, I'm like everybody. Some days I look outside and I think, oh, golly, do I really want to go out into that, those elements and what have you. But, you know, there's a sense of accomplishments and a sense of overcoming and empowerment that comes when you kind of conquer the elements. But more importantly, there's also the thrill that if you can be those first footprints through the freshly fallen snow, it provides you not only the benefits of the run itself, but it supplies the mental and spiritual benefits of conquering the elements. I think there's a lot that comes from that. And I think athletes and marathon runners and half marathon runners, we learn to, you know, deal with speed bumps in life and either run over them or go around them, but still continue and move forward. And I think it's a good life lesson to lace them up and get your butt out the door, even on the most severe weather conditions.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's every run is a test and every run is a victory. And any day you get out there and do it and come home afterwards, it's another box that is ticked, another accomplishment, especially in the winter in Canada, right?
Well, that's so true. And, you know, I say to people, give yourself the 10-minute test. And that is leave your house and run for 10 minutes. If at the end of 10 minutes you think, well, the weather conditions are too tough or you just, you're not motivated to continue, worst case scenario, you get a 20-minute run in because you've gone out for 10 and you run back for 10, that's 20 minutes. I can tell you that when I've done that, 9 times out of 10, I even forget to check at 10 minutes because by that point I'm into my run and I start enjoying it and I've forgotten all about the grumbling and the complaining I did before I went out running. And it usually takes us about 10 minutes to warm up and loosen up. And you know, it's like the marathoner. You know your marathon training's working when it takes you 5 kilometers to warm up. And sometimes we just need to get out there, get moving, and discover nature and get close to nature again. And all of a sudden, the elements aren't that severe at all.
All right. Well, John, it is always great to talk to you. Thank you for all you've done for the running community in this country. And I hope you get some rest after a very busy travel season. And we'll talk to you soon.
That's great, Mark. You look after yourself, and we'll see you at the races in the springtime.
That's John Stanton, the founder of The Running Room. Coming up next week, remembering Terry Fox and elite runners Reid Coolset and Krista Duchesne. I hope you can be with us for the next edition of iRun Radio. Thank you for listening throughout the year, and once again, Happy New Year.